so happy to be here, so delighted to be reading with Maurice. So grateful to Deanna for all the organizing work. And so happy that Alex and Marcus and Rebecca are here, friends and family. Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? And would everyone feel comfortable like gesturing if you can or something like that? Okay. So I'm going to read two poems from my first book, and then I'll read maybe three from a new project. Okay, the first one is called Cruelty. When I was 11, I watched my cousin cut open a gopher with the serrated top of a tin can. I see this cousin now, straight shoulders, straight hair, each eye bright and sharp as a rhinestone. She knows a thing will yield if spoken too gently, so she doesn't waste time on incense and Sarah Vaughan. Last night, three girls at a bus stop beat an old man to death with black umbrellas. And here I am, bound to elaborate on the state of his glasses, knocked off his head and spinning into air that shimmered with rain. Yet everyone, when small, has come in from the river with something half dead in the bottom of a bucket, and no one expects that to become their defining moment. Now I want to find a red door and live behind it. I want to talk taxes and fiscal responsibility. But her undervoice is sleepless as a shark. It says, break that window, dial that number. At 11, it pulled me from the TV and led me up the driveway behind a parked Subaru to a square of dead November grass. The wind was fresh and sweet as an apple as she brought the metal down with a calm hand, teeth denting her lower lip. And she steadied the animal, saying, stay still, don't worry, my dad's a vet. I haven't opened this book in probably a year or two because I found it horrifying to open for no real reason other than my own neurosis. But all right. The second and last one I'll read from my book is called Hair. In this second of terror, the child sees herself as hair and sees her hair as it is seen, unwashed for 1 year, unbrushed for two, and now her scalp itches to the tangled roots of each eye. She knows her every bone has been whittled to an arrow that points to her hair, and every eye she meets becomes a butcher's hook from which she hangs. What would the dresser find if he cut in? A doorless house, a table set for none. So I'm going to read four pieces from a new project, and they are sort of in between prose and poetry. I wouldn't quite call them prose poems. I wouldn't quite call them poems. So you can think of them as short stories. To make this more interesting, I want to give you some context. So all you need to know is that these things are set in an imaginary town with a population of about 5,000 people. And the first one is called Hooves. She left me, walking away through fields of carrots and corn. I recalled every time I had embarrassed myself in her presence, being dirty, sick, stupid, and drunk, and I wanted to reel all those memories back into myself, though I knew they would corrode me, for I was not like her, with a mind like a typesetter's drawer. At first, the townspeople brought offerings, sugary wine and chocolates of obscure flavor, pine, rosemary, pavement after summer rain. They brought these things because they were desperate, for I was the only doctor, though I had none of the qualities you might expect. Clear eyes, strong hands, an abstract commitment to humanity. For days after she left me, I persevered, neatened my eyebrows, screwed on earrings, placed drops in my eyes, but I was too frightened to open my door. Townspeople gathered outside my windows, five deep at each pane, thinner every day, their jewelry tarnishing. Meanwhile, ferns refurled, light snow whirled down, and I could hear the soft wood of my house giving way. At every turn, I felt my brain's black rot slosh in my skull. I woke to the sound of some foreign sea in my ear. And so I ran. At first, I took the path she'd walked to leave me. I ran into new seasons, new ages. I ran till my hooves wore down completely. Then I wobbled on stumps. The townspeople and their ailments, their cancers and pregnancies, nearly forgotten. My loyalty only to myself, even though I discarded my name. I staggered on my kneecaps. I had grown very thin. And yet, if I balanced at a certain angle, my features were not unbeautiful to me. I moved through old lands, old industries. What was left of my legs contained much impacted material, gravel and dirt, but also cigarette butts, takeout spoons, pennies, and French fries and dimes, all driven up into the flesh. But the real humor came when I wore myself down to my pelvis. I laughed as I rolled forth, but not the laughter you're imagining, black, deranged, torn. It was the laughter of a good-natured person who has jogged into a telephone pole. I gave myself over to feats of concentration. How long could I live with this stick in my eye, with my neck at this angle? I had always been a clean woman, and luckily in the later months, the rain kept me in the manner to which I was accustomed. And then one hour, I found myself subjected to a vision. At this point, summer was collapsing into fall, and I had worn myself down to my ribcage, yet still I rolled forth. In this vision, my body had been refurbished, and I came to a field of bluebells and stood just at the edge, for I could no more imagine trampling the flowers than I could imagine trampling a field of human faces. I stood just at the edge of this field, and townspeople began to appear in a circle around it, each one healthy and well-tended, as if in my absence they had taken their bodies into their own hands. I felt a luxurious contentment in this, as we all drew closer, this makeshift community, and noticed the banked glow of our skins. But I was torn early from this vision, before it could bring me true comfort or clarity. I woke alone at the end of a suburban driveway, having worn myself down to my broad shoulders, which during the course of my journey I had come to love, if only because they resembled hers, which I remembered in detail, specifically how they looked in her sweater as she walked away. So the second last one I will read is set in the same town. Am I still okay projection-wise? Okay. And it is called The Town Buries Its Mayor. Things our former mayor liked. 1, laws. 2, butter. 3, composting. 4, small doses of ketamine. 5, kindness. 6, his grandmother's brooches. He had been a good and fair mare. He was a creature of curious depth and strangeness and endless strength. He would bend his ear to anyone who needed it. He broke his back for his neighbors on moving day. He created laws that helped the old, the poor, the sick, and the vulnerable, unlike the town doctor who had run from her responsibilities, unlike the town mystic who had embarrassed us with her fervor. He had come to the town from far away, from a polluted place, and he often remarked on how the air here was almost too fine and rich for his lungs. He felt he was breathing in stolen gold and emeralds that he had no right to possess. See, he was charmingly modest. He had been told the truth of our town's policy with mayors, that they were allowed to rule, perfectly or imperfectly, for 5 years, and then they were broken down and brought to the burial cairn on the neighboring island. He had agreed to these terms, but when his time comes, we are disappointed to find him weeping in the barnyard amidst his scattered papers. A billowing red mist appears to be emerging from his heart. The goats are nibbling his bowed head. We place our hands upon him, we pick him up using all the gentleness at our disposal, and we pass him over our heads, hand to hand, toward the water. Had the moment been less solemn, he would have realized the pleasures of crowd surfing. We move him toward the shore where the strongest of us are waiting with the boat. For the mare's sake, we had hoped for gray skies, but instead the day is driving its sunlight down our throats. We pile into the boat and power it with 8 people per side. Our mare is laid out at the bottom. He is dressed in a suit and one of his grandmother's brooches. This one a small arrow piercing a ruby. We are not sure of the condition of his face. It is wrapped in a scarf. His body has, by and large, maintained its integrity. The mare makes no sounds. Haltingly, we move in the water, splitting a path through the ice. The lake is a series of white, silver, and opal striations. The cold roots in our lungs and blooms, spreading to the filaments of each chest. The dark fuzz of fir trees seems so far away. These are always the very worst moments with our mares. What can we say? What comfort can we offer? We cannot guarantee that he will be treated gently. Okay, and this will be the last one. Whoa! Thank you. It finally happened. I knew I'd knock something over. Yes, the last one. It is called Oracle. On this, the last morning I'd wake up with my original body. I put on all my plastic jewelry. I stood by the window. I ate a banana covered in peanut butter. I bled through 2 pairs of underwear and into my jeans. I texted 6 people, begging each of them to fuck me while I still had this body. When I started to move, I passed many filthy children alone. I received no texts back. I was racing through the town. I was trying to incite. I was trying to provoke, the same way I repeat over and over the actions that make me sick. I have dug down into myself and found nothing. I have lurched my way across this town to the water and found nothing. I stopped eating. I stopped drinking. I wore a steel breastplate. How quickly I became intolerable, even to myself. I was not permitted to have the remains of the fetus scraped out of me. I was told to pass it naturally. I will leave this old body behind. I will reach the oracle. I will not ask for a prediction. I will ask to perform an exchange. My old body for a new body poreless, impermeable, unetched by even the mark of its maker. I have behaved grossly. I cannot wait to die. Yes, I know this will be no real death. From miles away still, the oracle says, "Keep moving. You have seen my face before. It has made as little impression on you as the face of the woman you pay for stamps, the face of the woman you pay for magazines, the face of the deaf woman who roams the library asking you to buy her homemade greeting cards." I am panting. I am climbing the mountain at the center of the town. The oracle will be found at its summit. My mouth is full of my own dust, Lines from my own poems rise unbidden in my mind, humiliating me, making me laugh too. Neon roadside flowers, tiny stars of chamomile, moving faster now. Rocks in my sandals, dust on my contact lenses, circled by deer flies, thus far unbitten. The hate I harbor in my limbs, my organs, the hate I harbor in my eyes, my mouth. The hope of women is murder. One man is following me, could be coincidence. Two men are following me, oink, oink, they say. I move through the fair. Wind coming over, rain coming down, day of radiance. Beep, beep, says a tourist in a white duck hat, moving past me. I recall the food processor at my restaurant job, feeding peeled carrots into it, whole. And finally, when I pass a woman vomiting on the trail, I do not wait for the other pilgrims to recognize her as the oracle and plant a thicket of crutches around her. I pause and cup her tattooed skull. I brush the pollen from her shoulders. I pick a caterpillar off her neck. I scatter the coins of my eyes at her feet. Thank you so much.